Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Sunny Side Up. Good afternoon, good evening, whenever, wherever you're tuning in, always the right time. I'm so happy to have you with us for the hour. My name is Jessie May. If it's your first time tuning in, welcome, welcome. And to all of our regular friends and listeners, I'm so happy to have you with us today. I have a beautiful show in store. I'm really excited about the guests I'm going to be bringing on in just a couple of minutes. I wanted to just give a few little updates about some of the goings on. I have a beautiful course launching in January, and I just wanted to mention that because I know several of you have been asking. The Creative Visionary course, we've just got a couple of spots left, so if you're interested, any listeners, and you haven't signed up, I encourage you to do so. That's starting January 19th, and Costa Rica is officially up on the site as well for April. So again, I know a lot of you have been asking. I have a little love mail going out this week about all of that. I just wanted to respond to several of you here, as I love to, on the show. And all of the shows as well, for any of you new listeners, are available. You guys can just tune in through the main site. They're all there. You can download them. You can tune in. If you like what you're hearing today, there's really a wide variety of different topics and themes and guests, and I really want to take the time to maximize the hour today, so I'm going to jump right in and welcome our guest for today. I'm really excited and honored to have Jason Gaddis joining me this morning. He, for those of you who don't know, I love that he so humbly shares about his experience, and you know, he sort of goes first as a householder, describes himself really as working and using the vehicle of his marriage and his children to ultimately become who he is. And it's just what I find so amazing about this man is that he's ultimately inspiring us to be more of who we truly are. And through his teachings and his own humble, vulnerable, real experience that he shares so authentically, it's amazing. He's super passionate about masculinity in particular and runs ongoing men's groups, men's leadership experiences. He's founded the men's leadership training as well as the Boulder Men's Experience. One of my favorite pieces is he's looking to provide his 4-year-old son with a smooth, conscious path towards manhood. And how much we need that today is, it's just such a call. So his voice is very profound. He's a regular blogger and a beautiful writer. You can find his work, Writer for Integral Life, Primer Magazine, Elephant Journal. He's got all sorts of other credentials, an MA in Counseling and Psychology, 3-year training from Naropa, former licensed professional counselor, gestalt therapist. But again, as I said, the credentials aren't as important as how much he brings through his own experience, and that's what I find so refreshing about his voice and his work and just his realness. So without further ado, I want to welcome you, Jason, to the show. It's such a joy to have you here on Sunny Side Up. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Jesse. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure, really. I've enjoyed you. I found you actually through, funny enough, as we do, through Facebook. I saw a post of yours come up, and it really triggered something in me. And again, as I've shared, the authenticity that you share with is refreshing because you feel how much it comes from a real place. Would you share just a little bit to give listeners sort of a feel for you about, without getting into the full story as things will come through, but just sort of what brought you to where you are and how, you know, just sort of a little bit of a snapshot.
Sure. I think what catapulted me ultimately onto the spiritual quest and the spiritual path and ultimately using relationship as a path was relationship pain. You know, I was a typical guy who dated lots of women and would keep them at arm's length and essentially make them wrong. And it was after about my seventh failed relationship that was, you know, no longer than 6 months that I said, maybe I'm the problem. And when I finally identified the one common denominator in all my relationships, which was me, I was just something, a light bulb went on, and I was like, holy shit, I can do something about that. I can't, right. You know, make this woman look different or be different or act different or be a different age or whatever. All this stuff I was kind of had been trained to do around women, I was like, oh, shit, I can change me. And when I, you know, took a look at the man in the mirror, so to speak, just a breath of fresh air came into my life, and I was like, okay, then I'm going to do something about it, because so badly I want an amazing relationship. I'll do anything to, like, know what love means, to know what it tastes like, to know what it feels like, and to go deep, because that's always what I was longing for, but I had no idea how to get it.
Right. Beautiful. And I, you know, and that's one of the things that's so profound about what you've come to around this relationship as a path, you know, because I get how much relationship really is. Without relationship, we don't really get to look at that man in the mirror, so to speak, right? Or that person in the mirror. And that's one of the things I find so compelling about your work, is you really address how much relationship acts for us as an opportunity to really see who am I as, you know, as within that, right? And so often, I mean, I see that too in my work, how, you know, the same things will keep coming up for people, and until we're really willing to look at that piece, and relationship serves as such a great teaching or lesson always to be able to recognize that. Turning point... Yeah, no, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to add that... so many of us also kind of relationship is if we're in an intimate relationship or a long-term partnership or a family situation, the best and the worst comes out, right? And
right.
It's designed that way. Like, we want the best and the worst to come out, the worst mm-hmm. so that we can actually transmute it and bring it into the light and have it be accepted. And that's usually where people bail. Because
right.
the worst of their partner comes out, and they're like, yeah. I don't like what I do.
Not so much.
I didn't sign up for this, you know.
Right, right. No, it's so true. And one of the things that I love that, and, you know, I've heard you share that, you know, people can meditate and sort of be on a spiritual path all they want, but, you know, get in a relationship and the real stuff comes up, right? And that it's so
totally.
True, you know. You can sort of be on this isolated journey, and if you're not really engaging with another, if you're not really participating, you don't get to see all that funky stuff come up and work through it.
Well, and we can use what I'm aware of, in especially spiritual communities, and I was in a meditation community for 5 years, like hardcore,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was like
mm-hmm.
full on, is
mm-hmm.
what comes up is relationship stuff, you know, especially
right.
in a sangha or a community situation,
yes.
But if the teachings aren't really there and the facilitation isn't there to deal on a shared language, then people are going to be acting out their wounds all the time unconsciously.
Right.
And people have, it seems like historically with spirituality, that relationship is sort of the last thing that kind of gets addressed, especially the relationship between teacher and student, or in the here and now between peers, and then how do we deal with our kids and our marriage. And everybody's maybe got a good explanation for it, but not very many people are talking about, like, how freaking hard it is and how uncomfortable
right.
it is and how we can actually use it to know ourselves more deeply and intimately.
Right, absolutely. And again, with the meditation piece, I agree. I mean, I think I actually teach it and I facilitate, so I believe strongly in it. But I feel, and as you share so beautifully, there's an integrated piece here too. You know, it can serve, but if it's just bypassing some of the real stuff or the relational pieces that are often where the greatest teachings live, it's not, as you say, the same stuff will just continue to come up, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's designed that way. We want it to come up again, right? So we can face it.
Right, right. And then we can pay attention. I mean, if we choose to, we can pay attention, and then there's the learning.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, one of the things that, you know, again, avoidance or not wanting to deal, and, you know, that's sort of where most people will blame, as you speak of, or turn away from in that. And this is so common, and we see this all the time, that fear of intimacy or going, you know, getting too close or being seen. This is sort of what I see through at the core. So if you would, just even speak a little bit to that and what that looks like, as sort of, even for someone listening who's sort of intrigued and recognizing some of their own behaviors, what are some of the first steps or first ways to recognize or even just engage with this relationship as a path?
Yeah, well, just let me back up one step to talk about that being seen part, and I'll tie that into what you just asked me. You know, if you're out there and you have a longing to be seen and a desire to be seen, and you've maybe even had a taste or a glimpse, you know it's possible. You know it's it can be done and can be accomplished, and you can be in a relationship where you feel seen.
Right.
And it, being seen triggers all of the things that happen to us as children, especially that, you know, usually the people that loved us the most hurt us the most, and whether unconsciously or consciously. Love is very conflicted for most of us. So when we finally get in a quote-unquote loving relationship, it's like part of us really wants it and part of us wants to run the other direction to our room and shut the door like we did when we were five. So, you know, it's complicated. So if you want something to be different, so the first step to answer your question is desire. You have to have, be in enough pain or have enough longing to do something. So that's like required to me. People who are like, well, I'm not sure, and things like that, just aren't going to get very far in working with relationship as a path, because they will remain one foot in, one foot out, arms folded, kind of darting in the heart, and just like, I'm not sure. And that's actually fine. There's no judgment there. And if you really want to go for it, and you know that because you're in enough pain or your hunger is strong enough, then it's going to probably be an easier sort of entry point for you.
Right.
So like that's
like a signal.
Step one.
Yeah. Right. So recognizing it, which I think is key, and being clear that, okay, it's, and I think what I'm hearing too is that willingness, right? That's a big core component.
It is.
Yeah.
And it's understandable when we claim we're willing, but then the behavior doesn't match the claim. You know, that's a common one too. But we just have to be in community and be with people that recognize that in us, and so that we can see it in ourselves. Like, oh, dude, you claim you want to have an awesome relationship, but check out your behavior. You're staying home all day. Like, how are you going to be in a relationship again? You know, and because we can delude ourselves a little bit because we don't always see ourselves very clearly.
Right.
So at a certain point, we definitely need community too. That's another requirement that I talk about is you've got to have at least, in community, I don't mean like 100 people. I mean at least 3 or 4 people in your life that can be real with you and know you enough to call BS on you, but lovingly have your back and want to support your highest growth and are willing to challenge you.
So important. And, you know, and to be that reflection, right, to, in the sense that when you're not, you can quite easily, as you say, get away with the BS or just the repetitive behavior that ultimately doesn't allow us to grow. You know, you speak of this sort of each time that we're, you know, annoyed. You know, it's usually an opportunity to learn something about ourselves. And, you know, I love that because it's so true. it's not what our ego loves to you know, to hear necessarily, but would you speak a little to that?
I mean, you know, we have to take the view that everybody in our life is coming toward us for a reason, and that reason is to help us become who we are. And so we're going to attract into our life a whole myriad of flavors of people, from super supportive to incredibly arrogant and mean spirited and ruthless, you know, the whole range. And that is living inside of us all of that, the whole spectrum of humanity is living inside of us. And so if we understand that, then when people trigger us and annoy us and piss us off, and including in the world situation to a very personal situation like a boss at work or an ex-lover or a child or a parent or something, that's what we need. That's the medicine we need to heal and to become who we are and to be whole. And we want to be an integrated human being if we're on this path. And so we say yes and thank you. We take that attitude, even though at first it's going to burn. And we're going to be like, fuck you. We want to, ultimately, we're working towards thank you.
Yeah. Love that. Yes. And that's so powerful. And I do want to get to that, how we can really learn to thank those who have hurt us and the power of that and the power of forgiveness. Which, again, is such an integral part of, I think, any spiritual path, but I feel as a part of this relational path is really profound in terms of how it can free us ultimately. Because I feel, and maybe we will just move into it just to touch on, but it's such a big one, but, you know, the forgiveness piece where, you know, often, like, just holding on to stuff keeps us from, you know, really the growth that ultimately allows a relationship to grow or to expand or to be that mirror for us.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm in the active conversation and inquiry right now about forgiveness and even I'm sorry. I've written a little bit about both of these, but I'm taking it another step here in what I'm learning with people. And forgiveness to me isn't necessary, actually. And it's common, and we want to say, yeah, we want to get to forgiveness, but forgiveness assumes that there was a problem in the first place. And so does I'm sorry. Yeah. And so I'm in the position in my life where I want to not use those terms at all anymore because it's all for my benefit from conception forward. And so there's nothing to forgive and there's nothing to say I'm sorry for, including my behaviors that have been inappropriate and violent or aggressive. So this is pretty edgy, and most people, you know, might get lost here and might be like, dude, I don't agree, and that's fine. And I don't have it that's how it is, but I am moving toward that. Go ahead.
No, I love that. I personally really feel into that because there's such a judgment with forgiveness and I'm sorry, right? It's framing it in such a way that, as you say, there was a problem in the first place. And it's not to say that the behavior wasn't coming from a hurt place, but I feel that the identification with forgiveness and the way we associate with it really comes from there's a deep-rooted judgment that I think most people struggle with. I see it myself, and what I'm getting as you're sharing and is more moving into an acceptance, if you will, that there is really a divine order to it all.
That's right. Yeah, and that's very, to me, very advanced and a pretty tall order to ask people to trust that deep, because that means that everything that you did to someone else and everything that was done to you is totally okay.
Right.
And
right.
People will say, well, that's not okay. Well, yeah, from an egoic, judgmental mind, there are certain things that, it's not okay that someone does X, Y, and Z to my child. I'm with you on a relative level. And it's what my child needs for their journey.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really hard. I've had, you know, some things happen in my family with my kids that were devastating in terms of the core. A core hurt has already happened to one of my kids. It was crushing, and can I trust so deep that I can actually thank, you know, the other person involved and the other family involved and the other, you know, can I trust that deep and do my work to get to completely thanking them? And I'm not there yet. I'm very close with this, you know, particular situation. I'm not going to go into the details because I want to protect my son's confidentiality, but in terms of, you know, like, can I practice that fiercely and deeply to be grateful even for what's happening. And, you know, because that's gratitude. Like, a lot of people in the spiritual scene do the gratitude thing, and they do forgiveness, and they do all that. But if they're honest, you know, a lot of it's not totally complete, and there's unfinished layers, and there's so many teachings around how we should be happy, we should be full of joy, how we should be feeling X, Y, and Z, and so we beat ourselves up because we're not there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we feel guilty and ashamed, and and everyone else must be farther along than us. But, you know, guilt and shame are, again, just designed to get us back in our integrity, back into the divine order of things.
Right.
And out of the
And there's a level of doing, too, you know, like doing gratitude, doing forgiveness, doing blame, doing shame. All of it is, you know, can be at the level of ego and judgment, right, where we're not fully experiencing it, but we're in the story of it rather than actually in the experience of it. And I think it's in the experience and the feelings and the heart, which is really where my teachings are rooted, that the healing happens, right, or that the appreciation for the acceptance can actually take hold. It's at a deeper energetic level than what the mind can conceive.
Yeah, that's right. It's in our physiology. So what's great about bypassing in general, with like saying forgive, I forgive you, or I'm sorry too soon, or just in general, is we're not done until our body tells us we're done. And well, the feedback mechanism, it'll just show up. The lesson will just show up again in our life and will haunt us until we actually change our physiology around it by being, you know, like a relaxed, accepting nervous system, for example, around the trauma. Then we're like, oh, then I'm done.
Right, because we can say we're done all we want, and we know that our body and our, you know, our vibration, if you will, is saying something very different. Wow, that's powerful around the forgiveness piece, though, and I like that. And, you know, just anyone listening, because I do have a lot of, you know, I mean, quite a range of people that listen, and I know we're sort of diving in here for everyone tuning in, but to just, you know, to sort of open to the possibility that moving into a space of gratitude around the experiences, it's just something to, you know, to look at, to open up to receive and to see where that lands with you, if nothing more, to get into the inquiry around it in your own life. I think that's really beautiful, though. Wow.
Yeah, and if you're out if you're out there and you're like, oh, okay, well, I'll consider this, but you're not, again, not willing to really do it because it sounds too much or too advanced, or you're still too angry or hurt, you know, again, you just have to get really honest with yourself and notice that you are more invested in being a victim than you are in being in gratitude for what's occurred in your life. And that's okay. Again, no judgment. It's just what is. Like, I have to be honest every day about where I'm at. I can't, you know, I can delude myself, but again, like I just said, the feedback mechanism in my own body will just bring me back to the place I'm actually at on my journey, and then life will show up and conspire with me to show me where I'm at. I'll continue to attract that kind of person in my life. I'll continue to have that one thing happen. I'll continue to play out my pattern. And it's like, dude, how much am I going to, how many more times am I going to do this?
Very true. And, you know, it's, I mean, as you say with the victimhood piece, or that, you know, and we'll, I want to get a little more into it because it's so powerful, but like how much the wounds are there to actually help us grow. It's just a matter of how resistant we are, or how, you know, the willing and the honesty piece you touched on is so critical, because without that too, we don't have much, right? If we're not willing to really look at ourselves and recognize what's really going on.
That's right.
And again,
I want to bookmark the, or the maybe unpack just the victim part for a minute, because some people use that as fuel to then beat up on themselves. Like, oh, are you calling me a victim?
Right.
Like, and then no one wants to be a victim, right? Like, everyone's like, no, I'm not a victim. Don't call me a victim. And it's like, you know, like, let's have some compassion for actually that kid who felt like a victim when they got hurt or, you know, assaulted or whatever deep trauma happened to us. You know, that very moment, there's a way in which we are a victim, in a way. And it's someone took advantage of us, and they crossed a boundary, and they whatever. And that's deeply, deeply hurtful. And that goes in our body. And I'm still saying, and that's for your benefit. Because, you know, my view is the soul view of, you chose this life to work out what you need to work out. So you're gonna have to go through an ordeal in your life. It's like an initiation to be a human being. On a soul journey, you're getting initiated into a series of, for a lot of us, a series of very painful things. And then we turn the initiation around 180 when we get in the driver's seat and go, aha, I'm catching on. I see what's going on here. This will continue to happen to me unless I change the game here and I get the lesson. And most people aren't willing to do that because, again, it's an advanced move. It requires a fair amount of privilege. and a fair amount of awareness, and then skill and practice to like, whoa, this is so wild how this is, you know, there's this mystery, but it's kind of this divinity going on that's having me work through this. We're so supported. We're supported more than we can ever imagine.
Right, and our mind or our ego keeps us so removed from wanting to, you know, or just so ultimately in denial of that truth, right? Like, we'll look for every opportunity to build against seeing that peace, which is
right.
is again why community is so profound, and what I love so much about your work too, because when we're in that energy of group, which, you know, I love to share here as well and hold space, we really get to witness each other in a way that, even if in your own isolated way you can't get there, in a group something very magical happens where that reflection is profound, especially when it's being held in an authentic, real, vulnerable way.
Yeah, totally. So let me give you a personal example from this weekend.
Yes.
Can I go into that?
Please
Great.
Do.
So
yeah, I'd love that.
Cool. So I just led my first ever Relationship as a Path workshop this weekend, Friday night, and all day Saturday. It was an amazing group of people.
Wow.
Yeah, very cool, very intense and fun and wild. And, you know, whenever I lead a workshop, I'm confronted with my own shit. So, you know, Friday night, like, I'm a, you know, an Enneagram 3, which means, you know, I grew up performing to get love. And that's how I got love, because I wasn't essentially accepted for who I am, as who I was as a child. So I learned to posture and, you know, manipulate and do all the strategies that I did to get my parents to, you know, quote-unquote love me. And very conditional, but that's how it went down, and that's how it is for most of us. So I developed this, you know, defended sense of self and a bunch of strategies, right? So when I go into, like, being on the stage or I'm in front of a group of people, all my performance shit comes up, and I'm like, oh, God, like, uh-oh. And I still have stuff to work out there. And if anyone's listening on this call that was from the weekend, you're going to appreciate this, because I didn't share this the weekend because I kind of put it all together last night after the whole thing was over. And, like, I was like, God, something's off. Something feels off about the weekend. What's that thing that feels off? Well, the sort of wound piece that I got to in myself was, it's never good enough. In other words, no matter how amazing and brilliant I am, I'm not good enough. People can be like, dude, that was like just rocked my world and changed my life, and that was amazing, and you're amazing. And it doesn't go in because I still have a part of me, small, it's gotten a lot smaller over the years, but it's still there, which is, nope, it's not good enough, and I'm not good enough. And that is all about me and my mom, because we had this whole dynamic. And so here I am, right, leading this work and bringing cool stuff and transmissions and just really, I think, awesome work. And I'm, like, at the edge of my issue here, like oh, shit, like, about to go into it and collapse into it, and I have to stay tall and, like, finish the work and everything. And I love that, though, because I continue to put myself in positions to face my stuff and to burn through it. And every single time I do, I get a little more traction and a little more traction and a little more traction. So I'm so grateful, right, that my soul somehow set this up so that I can, like, wow, I can work my stuff out. So where I, you know, there's all the participants that are practicing working through what they're dealing with. And then there's me kind of, you know, sometimes behind the scenes, sometimes being transparent about, like, this is what's going on for me.
Wow.
So pretty wild, right?
It was so wild and so beautiful. And the honesty and the willingness to see that piece is so profound, you know, at such a core level. And again, that's where the growth happens, right? The willingness to really step into it and see that. That's really profound. Really beautiful. Wow.
And we all have our version of that in our life.
Right.
Like, if we have a job or we have our trainings that we do, or we have our parenting or whatever our thing is in the world, like, it's just right the way it is. Like, some of us have to leave the job to get the lesson. Some of us have to actually stand up for ourselves at the job or put ourselves out there more. And it's all designed to get us to be who we are and to step into who exactly we are, to burn through that lesson, burn through that trauma and that history and that story that is running us, and be like, no, this is actually not true. This is what's true. This is who I am. You know, I'm a brilliant
right.
soul moving through space here, and here I am.
Right. And, you know, and the trust here, and I, you know, and this is a big one that I wanted to touch on, but it's so beautiful, and it really, it also just came through as you shared about your weekend, you know, trusting that there was something more, like you had that knowing, but, you know, trust is so big, and it's so important that on this journey, you know, whatever, wherever we're at in the journey, trust is so imperative. And trusting in that there is a force, whatever that may be, whatever that translates as for each person. You know, I'm very much, I also am very much a believer in the whole sort of soul journey and unfoldments through experience in that way, and that there is, you know, force beyond that guides us, or an energy, whether it's God or source, and trusting in that. But the trust piece is so integral, and to trust beyond what the eye can see or what the mind's eye can see, you know, is often very disorienting or scary for most. What
yes.
would you suggest, like, as a, or just even if you can speak a little to that, and maybe even offer like a little something, like a little tip or something that you would, that you like to share as a way to begin practicing trust, because it's so important on this journey.
Yeah, totally. I mean, really, relationship's such a wonderful place to trust, because there's
yeah.
trusting life, which is, you know, God, spirit, whatever you want to call it, that is an act of trust, and
mm-hmm.
on the big level. And most of us, if we, you know, if we grew up in a healthy attachment situation where the environment was so safe, we came into the world trusting. And then our first couple of years, that transmission went in even deeper. Like, my kids still have, my son a little less so, but still there's this huge trusting life. Like, they're so safe, and they can just be who they are, and they trust that the parents got them. You know, it's just, like, so wonderful to be, like, redoing this. You know, it's like, whoa.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
beautiful.
And
yeah.
it starts really with that sort of fundamental trust in life, and then we get into relationship with mother, and then father, and just people, and most of us aren't trusting. You know, we had a certain kind of birth, and then a certain kind of attachment the first few years, and it was maybe our mom couldn't be present for whatever reason, or our dad was working all the time, and so naturally there's going to be gaps in our trust. So to, first of all, not beat yourself up that you're not a trusting person, that you're have a hard time trusting, opening your heart in a relationship, or opening to someone into your vulnerability. It's really understandable if we actually understand each individual person. Oh, it's like, oh, I see why it got set up this way in me, you know. So, you know, most of us are walking around with trust issues. So
yes.
the place to play with it is in relationship, is to not only see the events in our life as trustworthy, and traffic is a great example, a great place to practice. And if you're in your
yes.
car right now
mm-hmm.
and you're pissed that it's going too slow because you're in a hurry because you're going to be late, you're not trusting. You know, you're not trusting the flow of the way things are moving in that moment. It's like, just get in your car and notice that aggression towards, you know, what's happening. You're in resistance to what's happening.
It's resistance, yeah.
Right? It's probably in L.A.
Yeah.
especially with all the traffic.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's the resistance is exhausting, too. It's such a waste of our
it
energy,
is.
Right?
It's
yeah.
such a drain. Oh, my God. So take a
yeah.
few breaths, take 10 deep breaths, and relax. And be like, oh, this is it. I'm getting what I need right now. So there's no reason to fight. You know, I don't need to actually work against what's going on. So traffic's a good place to practice. That's more non-relational, even though I'm still very much in relationship with every other car on the road and all
right.
that. But when
keep
we get
simple,
in a partnership,
sure.
yeah, yeah, keep it simple. I like, you know, a close friend, so pick a close friend. And a good exercise is to pick a close friend and say, hey, are you willing to do a kind of an edgy exercise with me? And say, sure, if they're a close friend. And so you sit down and you say, okay, we got to look in each other's eyes and take a few breaths. And I just want to see, I'm going to just say out loud, I trust you, I don't trust you, I trust you, I don't trust you. And I'm going to kind of keep tweaking that until I find the sweet spot of what's true for me as I look at you. And you might put a pillow in front of you if you're a little more of a scared kind of person. Say, this is my wall. I've got my wall up. I don't totally trust you. I want to let you into my world more, but there's things I'm not quite sharing. Even though we've known each other for 10 years or 20 years, there's still things you don't know about me. And that's because I'm scared. I'm scared to share myself with you, and I don't trust. I am scared you're going to X, Y, and Z, you know? So, like, we can start just playing. It's such a simple exercise to just turn towards someone and talk about what's going on. And it requires such vulnerability to do that, and risk and courage. And, again, if you're into relational warriorship, though, that's, like, what you want. That's the kind of level you want to be playing at. And actually, any beginner-type person can do this. And I did maybe a more involved version right there, just an example, but you can keep it really simple, like, hey, I'm scared. I just noticed that as I sit with you, I'm scared to share more of myself. And it can be very, very straightforward.
Beautiful.
Like that.
Right, and just to share as you do what's coming through and being, you know, to be the witness for each other. Yeah,
yeah,
that's
and in
beautiful.
The moment, in the moment, sharing is really what builds the intimacy, right? People aren't used to sharing in the moment. They're used to sharing about what happened yesterday or what's going to happen tomorrow. And so to talk about my immediate experience is very vulnerable and edgy.
And not to mention looking and gazing, which, I mean, windows to the soul or soul gazing, I work with that a lot in my workshops as well. And it's amazing how much more connected we feel when we really, I'm always just totally inspired and moved to witness the shift in energy and vibration in people when we do that, when you really take the time, as you say. I mean, it's really being in present moment with someone in a way that you're actually really seeing them, looking at them, connecting. And it's interesting because when I begin that experience with others, often it's, it can be scary for many. It's always in a safe, loving container so everyone feels safe for it. But it's, it's interesting to hear the shares and the experience. But just that alone, even to be in someone's presence in that way, as you say, being in the moment, being present, and really looking at each other, because we're not looking at the physical anymore. We're actually gazing beyond, and it's it's beautiful what can happen when we witness each other in that way.
That's right. Often, and some people, there might be a super isolated person out there that's like, oh, I don't have friends. Well, even still, like it's like then do something about that. Like if you really want something like relationship, or you want to have a little bit of a closer connection and you're a little bit of a hermit, then it's time to take a risk. Even at the, local grocery store or the post office or somewhere, just can you look in the person's eyes for just two more seconds than you normally would? Or can you take a breath with a stranger as you give them something? Or, there's some simpler ways too that if we're more in fight or flight and farther out in terms of the isolation scale, even there you can still practice.
Beautiful. And it's true, because there are opportunities everywhere where, as you say, whether it's in the grocery or, like my cozy mailman who comes. I mean, I love seeing him. My regular listeners know, but we've got he's such a love, and it's amazing how, or just anyone for that matter, even when we're walking down the street. And the beauty is we have an internal compass that, we can trust. Again, it comes back to the trust piece, because I often will get people, I don't want to just smile at a stranger or look at a stranger or, connect with a stranger in that way. That's frightening. But it's amazing how we can trust that as we do, there is an internal compass that's there to also protect us. So it's not to say gazing at someone who might, be quote-unquote dangerous, whatever. I mean, that's a whole other discussion. But, it's when we can allow ourselves to go there, we're guided.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Would you speak a little bit to, because you've touched on it, but, I know you mentioned sort of that privilege piece when you were just talking about it in another context, but just I know there's a lot you could say about it, but the gift of having the choice, like looking at the piece around, I know you describe it as, to move from survivor, being in reaction, to warrior, like having, the choice around our reaction, or as I often describe it, as responding rather than reacting. Mm-hmm. But if you could just speak to that, because it's really beautiful, and I love how you explain it.
You mean the piece around how when we, let's say we, when we react, because we all react, right?
Yes.
That what we're cultivating here is the ability to choose what happens next. So it's not like we're moving towards being trigger-free and being just oh, just all blissed out and peaced out that we never get upset
mm-hmm.
anymore. I don't
mm-hmm.
think I've met that human being yet. And so
mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure in my experience it shows me that I'll always react. It's what I do with the reaction, like you're saying, responding. And
right.
there's a window for all of us. And as we practice more and more, the window, we can slow down the frames. You know, if we just pulled someone off the street right now and then we did something that triggered them, they would go into the back part of their brain and they would just start shouting or they would have a reaction just instantaneously. And yet someone with this work, we did the same thing, they would go, huh, whoa, what?
Mm-hmm.
Their nervous system would already go into fight or flight, freeze, but they would, their brain, they have enough training in their brain that they'd be able to take a couple breaths and go, whoa, that was so intense. My body is like, you know, just flared up. My heart rate increased. Holy shit, what is going on right now? And then they could like observe, their witness is still online, and they can observe what's going on. And then they might even be able to put up their hands or call a timeout or say, whoa, hold on. Like, I need to take a break here. That was too much, too fast, too soon. Yikes. Like, give me a second. And so that person is more of a warrior because they're reacting just like the other person did, but their ability to respond to it differently, they have more capacity there because they've trained a little bit. You know, their nervous system, they've used their brain to train the nervous system so they can, you know, take a set of boundaries,
right.
talk back in a respectful way, not in an animalistic sort of way that they just, it was done to us or whatever.
Right, right.
They can choose.
Right, they can, and that's what I love. It's so true, you can choose, and that, as you're saying too, the more you do, the more you can learn to choose or pause and respond there. We actually can strengthen that, you know, which is amazing. So it actually does get easier, even though at the beginning it can feel overwhelming. The joy is that as we practice it, our resistance internal often, as you described too, sometimes it's just like it'll be, you know, as we're observing, it's like, wow, there's like a real internal reaction that can be strong. But the more we practice, the softer it gets, as you say, it's never going to be, or it's rarely always perfect, but it can certainly soften and become a lot more just accepting, right? Accepting in those moments when we're triggered.
Yeah. That's
beautiful.
Right.
Woundmates to soulmates. I love how you talked about that. I mean, and so we've touched a little bit on it. Could you just share a little bit about, you know, even just your own journey with that and how in your own relationship, I mean, without getting too into it, but I think it's so powerful and even something that I see come up a lot in my workshops and, you know, just this idea that there is so much to that. And I mean, if you could just speak to that a little bit.
Sure. And then I wonder if maybe if there's a question out there, we could take one.
Yeah, I do. I have a good question I want to get, and I think it'll actually be a good segue. I mean, we could do the question now. It's up to you. And I want to get into...
I'll do the woundmates.
Okay.
I'll do that real quick, and then we'll do the question. That sounds good
okay.
to me.
Okay, perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, so woundmates to soulmates. You know, when we first meet someone, first of all, I don't think we really choose our partner. We're not that smart. I think it's happening way more on an unconscious level that we're attracting each other into our lives for, again, this divine reason to work things out. So we tend to attract pretty much 10 times out of 10 the people that we need, not always the people we want. And so a lot of people have some magical thinking that, you know, the soulmate is going to feel good and everything's going to be great. And, you know, for a lot of us, for the first few months, 6 months, even a year, in the honeymoon phase, it can just feel good. It can be just a love fest, you know, lots of lovemaking and beauty and poetry and art. And just, it's like, wow.
Right.
The union of these two amazing souls coming together. And then, you know, you live together and you have to, like, share finances and you have to start dealing and you have to share. And you're like, oh, my God, you live like this? And then, whoa, you start seeing the person for who they really are and the other side, right? And then the woundmates thing comes up. And all of a sudden, we start triggering each other and upsetting each other. And people that have a very sophisticated defense system, like, say, my parents or people in their generation that never really did any work on themselves, can just compartmentalize a lot of those issues. They can just sort of, I'm angry, and you're not supposed to be angry, because that's what my church says, and so I will tuck that away over here, and I will just keep loving this person.
Right.
So, you know, some people can really just push that stuff under the rug forever, and then what happens is their body bears the burden, and then they start getting an illness and the disease and so forth. So,
right.
You know, it's still going somewhere, but it's their ability to, like, manage it is very strong. But that's not who we're talking about here. We're talking about people who want to grow, and they're like, all right, so I'm in my woundmate thing, and I've attracted someone, and I'm getting triggered a lot. Well, again, we're taking the view here that relational warriorship is, that's a blessing. That's exactly what I need. I need to be triggered a lot. And we want to be kind to ourselves around our nervous system. So for some people, getting blown out every day and fighting or getting triggered and stuff, and you just can't settle, you're not going to develop in a relationship very much because you're in fight or flight response all the time. So that might be actually unkind to yourself. So that might be too steep of a of an experience for you, and you need to downshift a little bit, and then you end that relationship and you go find one that triggers you slightly less. But again, I tend to take the view that we're getting exactly what we need and just the right dose and just the right amount all the time. So even when you think, it's usually just ego anyway that thinks they can't handle it, you probably can't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we work from woundmates for, you know, my wife and I was about 3 years of being woundmates, like hardcore, you know, boxing gloves, you know, metaphorically. both therapists going at each other and trying to, you know, analyze everybody and you're projecting and no, you are, and just on and on. When we finally, you know, I had to do some deep work, she had to do some deep work, we had to break up a couple of times, and then we found more of a sweet spot, and then it was movement back into soulmates. And that, and soulmate to me, again, isn't defined the way it is in pop culture around it, just kind of romantic and Jerry Maguire and all that. It's actually a soulmate is the person who you need to develop as a soul on this journey, and sometimes they're going to kick your ass for a long time. Like my wife still can kick my ass in a really good way, and I want that because I want to grow. So I'm a complete yes to it. Sometimes in the moment I'm a no, but I move pretty quick into a yes again. I have that part of me that's like, no, go away, I never want to talk to you again. but, you know, moments later, hours later, I'm like, back to thank you. Okay, cool, got it. Mm-hmm. You know, apparently there's a big wound over here that I need to keep working on.
And I think that's the key, too, is identifying it. As you say, like, the soulmates usually are the ones who can trigger, you know, it's not just peaches and roses. It's usually those who actually can trigger us the most because there's the greatest learning there.
Yep, that's right.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, I have, it's from someone in Montreal, and she's written, it's actually beautiful, but it's sort of long, so I was just looking it over, and I'm going to sort of paraphrase here, but we have Sarah in Montreal. I'm actually from Montreal, so we've got a whole Montreal Canadian contingent listening.
Nice.
And I'm excited because I've been telling them all about your work, so big shout out to my Montreal. I just came back from a trip there as well, so... And she's saying the essence being that she's saying she really loves her partner. She's been with him for 15 years. She's been on a spiritual journey, and he's not open to it. So sort of to paraphrase, because she gets into the details, but what do you recommend? And it's a good one because I see this come up a lot as well, where you have one partner who's totally on board and wanting and willing and open and honest, and the other one who's quite resistant, and often it'll be a longer, you know, you were describing your relationship with your wife and how willing still, regardless, that you both were, despite that you were, you know, in that woundmate phase. But what do you do when you're kind of up against a relationship where that one person is really not on board? Or what would you recommend in that situation? Yeah.
I love that I just got your Montreal dialect there when you said against. That was so cute. Right there.
There's certain things that I say that totally give it away, actually.
That
I know.
Was awesome. Yeah. I'm like, oh, you're a California girl. And then I was like, oh.
No,
yeah.
I'm so.
Montreal.
No.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah, straight up.
Okay.
Montreal.
Yeah. So that's a really common one I get all the time also. And I've been a little more courageous as of late to say it's not going to work. And people are like, get pissed and reactive and so on. And here's why, and then I'll say why it could work. So for Sarah out there, why it won't work is so long as, you know, you are not communicating with a shared language or a shared context, it's going to be a challenging relationship. That will always be an issue where you will butt heads. You'll want to change him, and I wish he would just get on board with the spiritual stuff or personal growth stuff. And he'll be like, stop trying to change me. You're judging me. I feel judged, and I don't feel accepted. And then she feels not met and not seen, and it's back and forth. So usually, and it's fairly common that that's the dynamic. The woman's growing, the man's not. But it can be reversed, of course.
Yeah.
And the woman is, if we really want to be seen, if she really saw herself, Sarah, if you really saw yourself and you loved yourself, you'd move on. Because you don't want to hang with people who don't see you and support you in your highest values and get you. And so some people can make it work, and because you don't see yourself probably and love yourself in a certain way, you're willing to continue to try to get someone to do that for you. You know, you're going to keep staying in that conversation, which is, God, I wish he would just, if he would only blah, blah, blah. Like, and then he feels like shit because it just doesn't feel good to be in a relationship where he feels not accepted as he is.
Or appreciated, right.
And same thing for him. So if he felt accepted and loved himself and totally accepted himself, he wouldn't be with someone who was trying to change him all the time. He'd move on. So you two have, you're kind of colluding there with this pattern that to me is not serving either one of you in terms of your highest development. Some people want to be in that kind of relationship. I think the ways I've seen it work, which is very rare, are when the one partner who's growing and the other one isn't, somehow that works. And they actually, she has her friends and her community, he has his friends and their community, and they just have this amazing chemistry, not only sexually but otherwise, that they're both a yes to. There's no contraction, and they both accept the other person in their highest values. They're not trying to get the other person to live according to their highest values. They're accepting, hey, I accept that your highest values aren't my highest values, and I support you in yours, and I love you in yours, and I'm cheering you on in you and yours. When that attitude can take place, and that's how people are relating, it can work, but that is very, very rare.
Right. I agree with everything you're saying, and I think one of the biggest pieces is the not, you know, wanting or not just knowing that we can't possibly change the other person. And you'll see where someone's on a spiritual journey and they, they're inspired and they want to share and it's coming from the right place. But at the end of the day, I think what you're saying is so true that, you know, because the other person will then feel, you know, that they're not good. And it's a big trigger fest. So it is very bold and courageous because I get this come up a lot myself, and, you know, I'll often encourage someone to come from their highest good rather than wanting to change, but that takes a lot of practice, and at the end of the day, it's, you know, we've often attracted the partner when we're at a stage of our life where we weren't maybe as actualized as we are as we step onto relationship as a path or a spiritual journey, and so, again, life is showing us that, you know, because it's the question of whether it's, is it still an assignment or is it time to move on? And I love the courage that, your stance there about just maybe looking at. So what would that look? What would you say just as a last quick piece on that? So what would be a step then to, do you think there's, it's worth giving it a last sort of, or?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't move on. Personally, I don't recommend people move on until they've practiced hardcore at, like, loving and accepting the person in their highest values and then loving myself and seeing myself clearly and loving the shit out of myself to the point where, oh, this doesn't work for me. Because if she doesn't do that, then she'll just say she fires this guy, she'll go find another relationship where, again, we get into a similar pattern because she's not willing to see herself and love herself.
Right. So that's the key, is that get to that point within and then, like, the truth will come forth, or it'll be obvious, right?
Yeah, because if you end the relationship now, and the finger could be pointed outward, right? Like I'm just more spiritual and I'm more growthful, and it's, you know, because he couldn't hang with me, I'm moving on. That's all blame,
right?
You know, and we're not talking about blame here. We're talking
spiritual.
About responsibility.
Right.
Yeah, it's saying, oh, apparently I'm not willing to totally love myself and accept myself. That's why I'm with people that don't love and accept me as I am and don't want to grow with me. It's because I'm not there myself.
Mm-hmm.
you know.
Beautiful.
And I'm, the metaphor is if I'm hiking Everest and I, you know, he's down here and I'm near, getting near the top and I'm like, come on, dude, I'm trying to drag him up. You know, it's like, dude, we don't need to play that game. It's so dishonoring of his path.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
let him have his path. He might not want to climb Everest. He might want to go a different way.
Right.
But you should not be held back. Like, don't blame him for your unwillingness to get to the summit of, you know, your next place in development. Like, be yourself and do it the way you want to do it, in your integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, stop abandoning yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's it, too. It's like, it ends up we compromise ourselves or we shrink ourselves to meet them where they are, and it's just, yeah. So I think that's beautiful. So, Sarah, I hope that gave you some good opportunity to sort of step into even more of who you are and your strength, and I'm sure that speaks to so many listening. We're really rounding out on the hour, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to speak about parenting as you talk about it, your foundational practice in life and as such an integral part of the spiritual path, because it's so beautiful how you share around that. So would you just touch a little bit on that for everyone?
Yes, and one more thing for Sarah, sorry.
Yes.
Just
yeah.
stay curious about fear, right? Like, what am I really afraid of if I just love myself and all that? It's like, so fear is in here. Yeah, so parenting. As I've written about a bunch on my blog and Facebook and elsewhere, parenting is a spiritual path. And when parents see it that way, it's incredible. And no matter how hard of a situation we have at home, no matter what our kid is going through, it is that experience is here to wake us up. And essentially, our kids are our disowned parts. That's why we have children, is to have these little beings embody our disowned parts and trigger us so that we can own them and be whole.
Mm-hmm.
And it's brilliant the way it works. It is divine, divine, divine how it happens and how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And parents who aren't seeing it this way will struggle, and it's going to be a suffer fest. Or they will use their kids to feel good about themselves, and then the kids will feel so unmet and unseen and manipulated and used, essentially, to live out their parents' life. So, what we don't deal with on our journey and finish in ourselves and commit to completing, we're passing the buck to our kids and saying, you deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to face myself. And that's pretty intense when we get to that level, because I see it happen a lot because I work with families, and to see parents just resist their stuff mostly because they're scared and it's uncomfortable. They just pass it on to the child. But you know, usually it's okay, because usually there's a child who is up for it. I'm up for going to, I'm going to change the lineage game. I am the awake soul here that's going to, like, I chose this family. I'm going to be the warrior that comes in, you know, gets this done. And it's, you know, usually an 18-year-old or a 15-year-old. It's wild to see these teenagers. They are so awake and they're so, like, on it.
Wow.
So, yeah, parenting is a massive path, and it's beautiful. It's every day. It's relentless. It's a beautiful crucible. I highly recommend it. And if you're a parent who's not seeing it this way, then start seeing it this way, and your life will change.
Right. Oh, so beautiful. there's so much. I mean, I realize there are so many things I wanted to touch on, but it's just, I mean, you have so much beautiful wisdom to share. And again, I love that it's so much of it is through your own raw, authentic experience. And that's what's so refreshing about everything that you share. It's coming from such a real place. So we're literally wrapping up. I want to let everyone know where you can be reached. What's the best place? I know there's your website. Do you want to just share how best to reach you?
Sure, probably Facebook and my website, and it's just jasongaddis.com, J-A-Y-S-O-N, Gaddis, G-A-D-D-I-S.com. Same thing with Facebook, Jason Gaddis. And you can also Relationship as a Path on Facebook.
Beautiful, and he has so many amazing blogs, and I mean, just there's so much great material on there. I just want to thank you so much for being with us for the hour. It flew by as I knew it would, but you were really a treat. And I know I'm already getting messages, but you were such a joy to share the space with. Really, I so appreciate what you're doing in the world. It's so needed and necessary, and relationship as a path is just profound. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, deeply, yeah. And thank you for being such a bright light. Your photo on your site is like, I'm like totally getting that about you. You're just like, just a bright light. So thanks.
Bless. Well, I hope to come out for one of the workshops too, so we'll have to talk, and we'll definitely bring you back on and I look forward to more shared experiences. So thank you again for all that you're doing. It's really a gift.
You got it.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Okay.
Have a blessed rest of your day. Okay, bye. Thanks. And to everyone, bye-bye. Have a beautiful, beautiful rest of your week. And I will catch you next Monday with more Sunny Side Up. Thank you for listening.